I'm Beatrice, your host of the Let's Talk Relationships podcast. Join me and my guests as we explore all things related to singleness, dating, and relationships. Together, we'll hear from real, everyday people and a few professionals and their experiences with self-growth, heartbreak, modern-day dating, and so much more. Thanks for tuning in. And if you're here for the long haul, be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to Let's Talk Relationships. You may not know this, but this is our first episode that we are recording. It may not be the first one we launch with, but it is the first one we're recording, and so we've got to just put it out there. I've got my good friend Logan Lee here with me. He is the lead pastor of Ignite LA Church, which is a new church. What, 6 months? It's just been around. Him and his wife moved to LA from Nebraska, Omaha, Nebraska. And planted Ignite LA here. And we actually met really random. We met on Facebook in 2020. I think it was 2020 or 2021. And I forgot what we were even chatting about. It was like some group chat in Playa Vista. And we ended up meeting because I was like, what the heck? We live local. You're a pastor. Like, I'm Christian. Like, let's totally meet up. Him and his wife and I, we had lunch. And it was so fun. We're just talking about like life in LA. And what I loved about the both of them is they have such a passion for LA. And I mean, more than probably people that live here, like they love this city so much. So I'm so grateful that he's able to come on this and just to see how much their church is already, you know, growing. And it's incredible. It's not an easy thing to do. So I really commend you for starting in such a very difficult city. So, but yeah, I think what we're going to start with, I'd love to kind of get Logan's input on life in LA and dating in LA. Like obviously he's married, so he's going to come from a different perspective on this, but, We've talked a ton about this. We like DM back and forth on like just our dating horror stories or what he's, you know, what's he seeing in his church and people he's talked to, because he's a great connector. The one thing I love about Logan is he is a great connector. He will go out and meet people and start talking to them and know their whole life story in like 2 minutes. So I always love that about you. That's where we're going to go. I want to kind of get your perspective, especially coming from Omaha, Nebraska, and seeing kind of the difference in LA life and then dating life and how that kind of shifts. And then we'll kind of go into kind of what that looks like, you know, we're obviously Christian, what that looks like in the church and all of that. So take it away, Logan. Give us your input.
Yeah. Hey, Beatrice. I'm so glad to be here. It's fun. I'm excited to be a part of this podcast with you. So yeah, you know, it's interesting because we moved here, 3 years ago this month, March 2020, and obviously things were shut down, but as things slowly reopened, we started connected more and go out and meet people, and we were putting a team together to launch
Side
the church.
Note, we both moved here March 2020, so that's funny. I love that going.
That's right. That's
we both
right.
Moved to LA same time. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And so, what a wild time. But it's interesting because, as far as relationships go, because I know it's what we're talking about, I've noticed a couple different things, and I'm kind of like a cultural anthropologist. So the way I approach things is I always try to like learn like what's the story behind the story, what's the overarching narrative of what I see. So for example, when it comes to relationships and people, one thing I've noticed is just how the pace of life out here, it affects not just the work you do if you're an artist, a creator, if you're a Silicon Beach entrepreneur, whatever you do, but it affects your spiritual life and it affects your relationship life, your dating life, your love life, all that kind of stuff. And
Absolutely.
So just a couple things. So I was a young adult pastor back in the Midwest, and so what we noticed is, you know, even leading young adult ministry back there of 18 to maybe mid 20, 25, 26, I think the oldest person might have been almost 30. But what I noticed back then is that a lot of people, even at 21, 22, were trying to get married, trying to couple up, trying to get connected. I mean, even my wife and I, we've been married 9.5 years. We'll celebrate 10 years in August. But even when we were in young adult ministry, we met a decade ago. But even back then, a lot of people were trying to get connected. Nobody wanted to be single past 30. That was what, nobody said that, but that was the sense, right? Yeah. And that's because the culture there, it really puts a pressure on you to do that because of, I know we were talking earlier, there's really not a whole lot to do outside of work. The social life is built around families with kids. It just is. And so that's what you see a lot of. And so people are kind of conditioned to believe, oh, I have to do that because otherwise I'm going to be left behind. Right? Finish my schooling, finish my education, get my degree, find a spouse, get married, get a house. And all that stuff can be done because, you know, cost of living is different, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Coming out here, for example, people don't come to LA to settle down. I always say, even like people that are older, even people that are, you could be over 60, but you're not like old in the same way you'd be old in the Midwest.
Yeah.
You're not, you know what I mean? Like you still have an energy. I'm not how to describe it, but like nobody really grows old here. They're just still doing their thing. It's amazing.
But one thing, no one does grow old here. It's actually true.
Yeah. You know,
so many ways.
Still, they're doing yoga. They're doing their, you know, they got their life going. They have a life. It's amazing. I love it. You know what I mean? But what I notice is in relationships out here, and when we see it like in our church, even too, primarily people that are, we have a lot of people turning 27 this year and a lot of people turning 30. I would say our main demographic is between anywhere between maybe 25 and 35. Obviously, we have a little bit older and a little bit younger, but that's like the main zone. A lot of it's singles and then couples who, you know, are engaged or married who don't have kids yet, that type of thing. And I'm noticing that the runway is longer. And so, for example, people come here, like we have somebody, he came, he's the art director for USC's football program. His wife is a teacher at a school in Brentwood. Someone else is doing this. Like, nobody, like people come for opportunity. They stay for opportunity. And if they meet people along the way, great. If they have a family along the way, great. But they don't come here to get established. They come here to pursue and advance themselves in whatever field they're trying to, you know, grow in. And so you see in a relationship, people always think they can do better. People always think that, you know,
the grass ain't always greener, but
options,
people think that.
The grass is, absolutely, it's greener where you water it. And so, but people think that. They think, oh, you know, I'll swipe left, I'll swipe right, I'll filter this out. Like, it's such a thing in everything. You know, they think they can curate their life. And I've never seen that before. I've lived in 5 states, from Nebraska, went to college in Florida, came back, lived in Idaho for a minute after school, and now California. And out of everywhere I've lived, like, I love SoCal, but I've noticed that is such a culture here in LA. And so you see that in relationships where people are always looking for something different. They're never settled. And there doesn't really seem to be like a goal in mind. You know what I mean? Like everyone's just trying to kind of make themselves good, make themselves feel good and pursue some type of fulfillment.
Well, and I think so much of it is about the self. Like, I think that's what we've, and I think this is culturally, you know, maybe it's starting to, you know, make its way in other areas, but I think LA from moving here, I mean, I lived in Long Beach and Orange County, so it's like I moved like out of state, but even just that small move, I noticed a big shift here. One, it feels like everything's about your looks and what you're presenting yourself to be. I think that's a huge one. I've never been so aware of what I look like ever. Then I move here and I'm like, am I wearing the right outfit? Like, I'm going to the gym and like, am I like, do I look good? Like, it's like, it's the gym, who cares? But it's like such a different culture in that sense. And I love what you said about like people are, there's a goal career wise, but they're kind of aimless in every other aspect of life, you know, like there's not like, you know, and I think we're getting there. I think there's a big shift from your 20s to your 30s. I think as you get into your 30s, especially for women, you're starting to be like, okay, I kind of need to get it together a little bit more. And you know, you're kind of coming into your own. And I think for men, it's a little different, a little bit, sometimes it's a little bit older. But yeah, I think we're kind of segueing into a time where we're so self-focused. And I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, actually. It could be a good thing, but I think it's a bad thing in terms of building lasting, loving relationships. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so like, for example, what I would see is like, in the Midwest, you'd have a 35-year-old female. She's probably married. She has at least 2 kids. She's probably done having kids at that point. She doesn't want to have more children. Probably has a home. Probably is kind of settled into life if she stays at home, if she works, whatever, you know, whatever they want to do. That's like people kind of have their rhythm by mid-30s of like, this is my life for the next however many 20 years or whatever. Versus out here, 35 could be anything. Like there's no
literally
type of like and this is not a dig on anybody at all, but like I've seen so many different like lives. Like 30 to 35 could be I'm trying to finish college, or I'm trying to get into this field, or I'm living with like 5 roommates, or I'm, you know, trying to write this script, or I'm trying to, you know, start this business or get up this, you know, ladder. Like it could mean literally anything. And so even just trying to minister to people like that, it's just a different demographic. And so relationship wise, I could just say, I'm glad that I came here married, you know, I couldn't imagine,
honestly,
I couldn't imagine. I mean, I could imagine it, but it doesn't seem like it would be as fun, like wanting to be in a settled relationship and then also be able to pursue all these things. 'Cause it's really hard to have your cake and eat it too, so to speak.
It is. And I think that's what we're finding is we're also seeing the whole, a whole shift and trend of people marrying a lot older also. Like, people mm-hmm. aren't really getting married in their 20s in LA. Like, it's actually kind of more unheard of when I meet people and they're like, I'm 28 and we're married. I'm like, when did you get married? Like, 25. I'm like, what? Like, that's just so, it's just so weird. Like, for this area, at least, you know, it's so different. But what do you feel like? Like, how do you feel like from the church's perspective, like, how is the church contributing to that? Because I feel like that's something that I see, like, not like the church's responsibility, but how is the church contributing to people waiting a really long time to get married? Like, are they building the community for people for that? But just curious how you see that.
Yeah, I think for decades, the church here in North America, U.S. and Canada, we've primarily geared all of our ministry programs, all of the sermons we preach, all of our systems, everything we do, marketing, social media, branding, all that. It's all geared primarily towards families.
Yeah.
You know, because there's this, you know, now if you look at scripture, Jesus was single. Paul was single. There's so many examples of people that, I mean, lifestyles could look completely different. Like, there's nothing in the Bible about that you have to be married or have children or... That's not even held higher than singleness. But yet, culturally speaking, we've made it that way over so many years here in the States. And so what has happened is the church structure has gone along with the culture. And that might work in suburban places. That might work in even parts of Orange County. That might work in parts of San Diego. It works in the Bible Belt. It works in the Midwest. It doesn't work in the city of LA. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because of all the things I just said, like, people are living different lifestyles. And so when churches think about stability, you know, stability spiritually, stability financially, stability in other ways, they think, okay, we need people. Like, the church I grew up in, a large, you know, Pentecostal church, been around 85 years, 2,000 people. You know, there's families that have been in a church longer than I've been alive, like 40 plus years. Like, they raised their kids there. There's this couple in their 70s. They're like the grandma and grandpa to, like, people my age, and they have had the same small group meeting in their house for 32 years. And I think they may have missed a few weeks here and there, but literally, like it's like, and that's a thing. And you can see it's beautiful because there's generations of people that have grown up in the faith and children that have grown up, and it's amazing. But it out here, it doesn't work that way. So I think that the church has kind of tried to make that one size fits all approach when it comes to that. And as a result, we've kind of left single people and even married couples that don't want to have kids, which is a smaller demographic, but they're too, like, there's people that have made choices. Like, I don't think I want to get married. I don't think I want to have biological children. I think this is the life that I've chosen. And a lot of times a lot of leaders just don't know how to engage them because you're trained to think of stability is married with 2.3 kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we're changing now, obviously, like 2023, it's going to take, you know, some more time. I think the benefit to being a new church is that everything's, you know, we're building our systems as we go. We don't have to start from like 50 years ago. We're doing it now. And so what has happened is that we can look ahead and go, okay, here's who we have. Some of them are probably going to follow a traditional route, but many of them might not. And as a result, how are we going to minister to them? And so I think that's the challenge for the church in this season.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, obviously we're going to speak from like a church perspective, but this is kind of for everybody. But I also feel like people are going into relationships and dating, and they don't really know what they want. They don't know what they're looking for, and they don't even know who they are. I think that's such a big thing that I see, and it's like, I think a big part is what we're lacking, and whether this is in church or in life, but I think we're also really lacking, like, elders. Like, we're lacking people that, like, paving the way for us. Like, I feel like it's kind of like the sad millennials. Like, I don't know about Gen Z, but for like millennials, I feel like we just don't have that. Like, we're kind of out here like trying to figure all this out on our own. I'm like, I don't know what a good marriage looks like. Like, I've had a trail of bad ones all around me. Like, you know, and I think that that's a big part of why people are also taking a lot longer to get married and be in relationships, because I don't think we even know what we're looking for. I don't know what we're looking for. I think we're dating very aimlessly. We're like, oh, he's cute. Oh, he's got a good job. Yeah, that sounds great. You know, and I feel like we've kind of shifted our mindset of how we date. And I think that that's a big problem. I think that's a big core reason why we're also taking so long is, one, we don't know what who we are. We don't know who we are, so we don't know what we want. So then we don't really know what we're looking for. So we're kind of just out there on dating apps, swiping left and right, and like, oh, he's cute. Yeah, let's go on a date. But we're not asking the right questions. We're not digging in deep. We're not we're not understanding what's good for us. And we're also not staying convicted to the things that we really want, I think, in relationship. So in terms of like the church, I feel like the church has also totally left single people out to just fend for themselves. Like, if they're going to do a singles ministry, it's always awful. Like, let's just say every church that has done it has been like I went to a singles event that I was not expecting. I thought it was going to be like a speaker series. And I dragged some girlfriends with me and we show up and we're waiting in line and they're like, okay, what color wristband do you want? And I was like, excuse me? What do you mean? And it was like some sort of red light, green light, yellow light, speed, not even speed dating thing. And I'm like, no, like we can't do this at church. This is like not what single people need. This is like, it'd be great to meet people at church that way. But I was just so like, no, you know, but I do feel like there's a lack of that. I think there's a lack of like elders. There's a lack of people like really guiding us into that. Like, what are we looking for in a relationship? How are we, you know, like all that. I just like there's such a lack. So we're kind of there to fend for ourselves to figure it out. And I think that's what I keep noticing with a lot of friends and you know, just the people around me and just the community and just seeing people even at our church. Like you can't meet someone at church. It's wild to me, I think. Like I've been to church my whole life. I have dated one guy that went to my church. Like once, you know.
Wow.
And it's just like, it's just crazy to me to think that people always say, well, if you're looking for a Christian guy, then like, why can't you find him at church? I'm like, they're not there.
Yeah.
But I think it goes back to what you're saying.
That was my standard. That was my cookie cutter answer. Like I said, for many years, I'd be like, show up to church. You pursue Jesus. They'll pursue Jesus. Yeah. You'll meet on the journey together. Right. And from what I'm hearing, at least here in LA, that's not, doesn't seem to always be the case. And again, it's cultural. And so you're right. We have to come up with a more robust way to minister to people versus speed dating or just talking about, you know, being celebate, waiting on the Lord. And, you know, it's just,
I mean, if we have another sex talk, I'm like, stuff, I can't, right? I can't take another, like, okay, we get it. Let's move on. You know, like from that.
And not that there's any, right. And it's not that,
there's anything wrong with that.
that's wrong with that, but it's the fact that that's not robust enough. It's not deep enough. It's not helpful.
No, not at all.
On my everyday life. Like I'm not just trying to go hook up left and right. So that's not helping me. What's going to help me is like, what am I supposed to be doing? You know, who am I in Jesus? Who are they? How can we grow and become more mature people? So I will say too, like, it's interesting because I think like, let's talk about dating apps for a second. I've never used one because I got married in 2013.
Lucky.
I think Tinder launched in late 2012. I think Bumble launched in 2014. And I'm sure there's more. Obviously, online dating's been around long as the internet's been around. eHarmony's been around for 25 years or whatever. But this idea, like, it used to be like, you know, like when I was pursuing my wife, like, I had to, like, go up to her and pursue her and make a move and talk to her. Like, I did do a little bit of Facebook stalking. It's not really a thing anymore. Gen Z doesn't know what that means. But the funny thing about it is that there was no swiping. You know, it's not like Airbnb or PeerSpace where I can filter out what I want.
Yeah.
Like that, I couldn't do that. Like what I had was who was there.
Yeah.
So who whoever was
you.
There.
Yeah.
Was that was the pool, so to speak, of like potential people that I could want to, like, if I wanted to pursue somebody, if I want to get to know somebody better, that's who, what was there, you know? And obviously all those people wanted to couple up. So we had like four or five friends that got married within 6 to 9 months of all of, we all got married around like less than a year of each other because everybody was trying to couple up. And I actually had one friend be like, hey, don't leave behind, you know, like, because nobody wanted to be the token single person over 30 something. And, you know, obviously that's
token
not a thing.
Token single person over 30.
Well, if you're out here, you're not really, no one's really a token single over 30 because it's just, it's actually common. And so I think, yeah, I think you're right. There hasn't been a good example. We're a couple generations removed from actually seeing good, healthy families. Even if you come from a good family, you just don't see, you know, healthy, stable relationships. And people don't tell you about their life. People don't invite
No.
you. When's the last time a couple has invited you to their house? Like, come, like, do life with my family. Come see how I talk to my husband and how I treat my wife and how I raise my kids and what we do and how we have a fun relationship. Nobody really does that, you know?
No.
And we just finished the premarital counseling of a 20. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, like, we actually had a couple that they're 22, super young. They just got married. We just did their premarital counseling. And one of the things I'm trying to be really intentional about is bringing them into, like, how what we're doing just as couples, because I want them to be able to see, you know, things. So, like, 10 years from now, when they're, you know, kind of where we are, I want them to be able to model what they've seen in their life. I want to be able to model that for them so they can know how to live right. Because you're right, that's missing in culture and it's missing in church.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that's a big component. And I think a lot of us, you know, not a lot of us, but our parents' marriages, I don't know that a lot of us are, like, looking up to that. You know, we love them, bless them, but, you know, there weren't necessarily the examples that we need. And I think that's a big part of, like, I know you and I talk a lot about this, is, like, when we're looking, what are we looking for? Like, what are our standards? What are our, obviously, from, you know, for me, it's like, you got to be Christian, but it's, like, beyond that, like, what are we looking for, you know? And, you know, we've talked a lot about, like, you know, compatibility versus suitability. I can never say that word. And what the difference is between those two. And, you know, we said a lot, like, with compatibility, you can be compatible with a lot of different people. And I think that also makes it confusing, because you're like, okay, well, this guy seems great, you know? But I think when it comes to, like, is this person suitable for you? I think to get to that level, you have to really understand who you are and what you are looking for. And not, like, he's got to be 6 foot tall and he's got to have this hair and all that. And I think that isn't modeled enough for us. Like, we don't see that in other people's relationships. We don't see it in other marriages of, like, you know, hey, when we were dating, like, this is what kind of brought us together. This is how God brought us together. This was, like, the big thing in our marriage, you know? And so we're kind of just out here, like, what am I looking for? You know, I think that's, like, a big part of it. But, like, I'd love to get your take on, like, you know, suitability before versus compatibility, and kind of how you see that play out in people's relationships and as they're seeking relationships.
Right, for sure. So first of all, the definition of compatible actually is the ability to exist together without conflict. Okay, and obviously you're going to have conflict. You're going to have conflict in a relationship. It's going to happen. The thing you have to learn is how to have healthy conflict. But then suitability actually means what is right or appropriate for a particular person or place. Okay, and so I think when we talk about compatibility and suitability, when I think compatibility, I think of, you're on the app and you're toggling or you're swiping, right? And it's like, again, you're trying to curate a relationship before you even met somebody.
He likes to camp. Oh, he likes to hike. Or he has a dog. Like, you're looking at all these cutesy things. Like, oh, you know, and you think that's, like, gonna be it.
Yeah. And okay, great. You know, we have our standards. Like, has to be a non-smoker. Oh, you know, has to, you know, likes dogs. Likes to go on long walks, likes to travel, you know, vegan, likes oat milk, whatever, you know, whatever it is, LA. Yeah. But I think the most important thing about that is that's not that hard to do, because you can be compatible with a lot of people.
Yeah.
Right? In terms of interests, you know, so some of our pastors back in the Midwest, they actually say, like, you know, we don't actually have a lot in common, you know, other than Jesus and football. You know what I mean? But our passion is really being on a mission and leading people to Jesus together and doing ministry together. So when I think about suitability, I'll just talk about my story. So I got married at 24. I'll be 34 in July. And I remember at the time that, you know, I had spent a few months in the Middle East. I had traveled. I had went to college. I had done a bunch of different things. And I was on a trajectory of a career that I was wanting to start, you know, at a young age. But I remember when I met my now wife, who was then, actually before she was my girlfriend, I remember specifically in that moment thinking, okay, I have an archetype of who I'm looking for in terms of looks and attractiveness and interests and things like that, but I didn't fill in all, like, a bunch of other details. Like, I didn't even think, like, I love to hike. My wife hates hiking. Like, you know, like, she loves, like, going to roller coasters. I hate roller coasters. I close my eyes and I hold on white knuckle. It's so embarrassing. I do not like theme parks, but I do it for her, right? But my point is like, there's like, to me, those are compatibility things. Now there's a lot we actually share in common, and a lot of other interests that we do have in common. But I think that the high level thing for me and for us was, what is Jesus calling us to do? Who are we?
Yeah.
As people, who am I? And I think even at a young age, I had enough of a sense of who I was. Like, for example, I knew I wanted to live in a major city. I knew that I wanted to start something. I knew I wanted to do ministry. I didn't know it was going to be a church plant. I didn't know exactly all the details, but I knew. And she also had a calling to do that as well, like as a communicator and as a leader and all this stuff. And so we knew that was going to be a part of our story. We just didn't have the details worked out. And so I think because we had that worked out, we knew, okay, we can go along this road and we'll just build the rest of it together. And I think the problem is now is,
it's amazing,
because people get married later. The only problem with getting married later, because I'm not one of those pastors. Some leaders will be like, the solution to the problems in America today is get married young, have kids,
have babies, you know, like, and
yeah, we're gonna just populate the world for Jesus or whatever, you know. Woohoo! I'm like, okay, it's kind of weird, but whatever. The thing is this. We understood that we could figure things out as we go. So you can build a life with somebody. You ever hear about those old couples? It's like The Notebook. You get married, you have nothing, and they build things up together. I feel like we've lost that idea a little bit, because now it's like, especially like, as you know, years ago, a lot of women didn't work outside the home if you go back 60, 70 years. So it was very much like stay-at-home mom, he has the career, you know. But now that both people are pursuing whatever they want to pursue, nobody really wants to kind of come and intersect their life with anybody. Nobody's really willing to compromise in any way. And I think the thing is, you have to make sure you don't cap somebody. That's a whole other topic we can get into, because I see couples do that and it's really sad. I never want to throw a cap over somebody. I never want to be the ceiling. I want to be the floor to my wife's dreams and aspirations. And so what I've noticed,
that's a whole other,
But that's a part of that story too, because a lot of people feel like, well, if I get in this relationship, they're going to hold me back. Well, no, they shouldn't. They should actually be the gas on your fire, you know, and that's really what it is.
And if they're holding you back, if they're holding you back, then that's something you got to question. Is this person right for me?
Right. Like, I would say they might not be suitable.
Is this person graced for me? Exactly. And I think that's where we get really mixed up. Like, is this person graced for me? Is this person going to push me into my, like, my purpose? But if you don't know what that is to start, you don't know who to bring with you in that. You know, like, I feel like if you don't know where your compass is, what's your north, where you're going, even if it's a little bit hazy, but like, you knew, you're like, I want to be in a big city. I know I want to like potentially church plant or start this business. Like, you kind of have somewhat of a direction. So it's a lot easier, I feel like, to understand, okay, well, who would I bring? Who would be most suitable for that type of life? Versus us trying to find someone and trying to squish them into this life that we really want. And they're like, And then someone ends up having to sacrifice. And sometimes it's sacrificing their passions. It's sacrificing their own purpose in life, you know? And I think that that's where you see a lot of divorce, unfortunately.
Yeah. And it, you know, we were just talking about this the other night at a singles event we were at. But as we approach 10 years, which I can't believe it's been that. It doesn't feel that long, by the way. But as we... As we approach that, it's like we started running this journey like a marathon or like an Ironman with other couples. And I can think of off the top of my head at least four couples that got married in the same year frame we did that are no longer married. They fell off.
Crazy.
Affairs, divorce, just stuff that I never, and it was very hurtful because like we were close with some of them and we saw things happen that I never thought I'd see happen.
Yeah.
But a lot of it came down to these things we're talking about is, they weren't aligned well. They were misaligned. There wasn't dialogue. They had a lot in common. They were very compatible people. But at the end of the day, when everything rose up to the top and they were unhappy with each other, it was because they lacked that level of suitability. And we saw it.
Yeah.
I think looking back, I can see it now. And I think that's one thing that obviously, along with, you know, just the presence of God has sustained us, is just this sense of like, we're very suitable for each other. We're very suitable. I think that we've grown more compatible, but we always have been suitable. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and I think our interests and all that change over time. So I feel like being suitable for someone, when it's God-given, it's like, this is the person. I go back and forth on like, is there the one? I don't know. I haven't like fully decided on how I feel about that. But I do feel like God can grace you for someone in particular, you know? And by grace you, I mean like, he's kind of made you be suitable for this person, you know? Like, I think, like, if, you know, like, let's say I want to start a church or something, like, that's my passion, or I want to start a business or something. It's like, I have to be mindful of, like, okay, well, what kind of spouse would I be looking for, you know, in that sort of space, mm-hmm. you know? And I think yeah. a big thing I see is people, yeah, they look at, like, oh, we like some of the same things and things like that, but, like, that's not really going to sustain you, you know? I'm reading this book right now, and it's so good. It's called, I hate the title so much, I wish they could change it. It's called Calling in the One, because I hate, it sounds so cheesy. I almost didn't want to read the damn book because it was called Calling in the One. But I'm starting to read it, and so it got to I think it was chapter 5, talking about our purpose, and she's really adamant about, I wish I had the author's name, but I don't. I'll put it in credits, but she talks a lot about, like, really knowing your passion before you – not your – I keep saying passion. I mean your purpose, really understanding what were you put on this earth to do, what is deep down inside of you that God has made you and created you to be. What is that thing? And it might not be always clear, but you have this inclination of what that is, you know? And I think that needs to be super clear before we really start pursuing anyone. I think before we start dating.
Right.
And, you know, I think there's, like, that little bit of, like, discovery that we have to kind of go through. But I think when you kind of understand at the core what that is, and you understand – and then it goes into understanding yourself. So that's a big one. So understanding who you are and understanding at the core what your purpose is. But it really allows you to align, like, okay, well, if that's the case, what do I need? What are my needs in a relationship? What are the things that I'm really, really looking for, especially if I want to pursue this? I feel like if God is calling me that – to that. And what she had said, she's like, the marriages that tend to last the longest are the ones that have a shared purpose. And I think that's so beautiful and it's so real. I think Tim Keller talks a lot about this in his book, The Meaning of Marriage, about how marriage is way more than two individuals coming together and now, they get to make each other feel really good and it's all great. It's like so much more than that. I think the marriages that last long are the ones that find purpose in their marriage. Like, their marriage stands for more than just themselves. Their marriage is bigger than themselves. Right. And I feel like that is a lasting marriage. That is a marriage that will withstand things because it's not about your feelings. It's not about the circumstances. It's not about any of those things. It's truly understanding, like, we are a team and we have a bigger purpose than just you feeling good and me feeling good. And that's, like, obviously that's part of it. That's, you know, but I just feel like a shared purpose in marriage is so beautiful. And I think such a big thing that's missing out there when we are looking for spouses and we are dating, we're kind of not dating with that. We're not really dating with purpose in mind.
Right. No, yeah. And people just aren't. They're not thinking about where they want to go. They're not thinking about who they are and what they want to build together. Like, why you're here. Yeah. Why you're here. And I think for me, I've always kind of had that kind of sense of calling. I've always kind of had this sense of purpose. I grew up around a lot of people that, you know, like people like my youth pastor, people like other leaders in my life, like that was kind of drilled into me at a young age. Yeah. A lot of people don't have that though. And so a lot of people, they go to school. Like, what are you going to major in? I don't know. You know, I'll just figure it out as I go.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
For me, it was always very intentional, but a lot of people, they kind of don't really know where they're going.
They just don't. A lot.
And no idea. And the thing that surprises me is I think here in LA, you see it, like, it continues on for a much longer period of time. And I think there's not really a sense of urgency. Nobody's really telling you in culture, in the church, that you have to, like, I actually had somebody tell me by 25, I expect you to figure out this.
Oh my gosh.
And I don't know if I would tell someone that right now, but I think for me, it was just kind of, again, like cultural pressure. Like, and I'm not into shaming people, but I do believe in pressure. I think pressure can be appropriate at times. I do think that, especially with men in this environment, there needs to be some more pressure in terms of who are you? What are you building?
You,
what are
you said it, not me. Just
yeah, yeah, and I think what you said this before is, like, if we're gonna make it, like, specific, like in LA, the culture here is very much catered to the female demographic. When I'm out and about, I see a lot, every clothing pop up, every food thing, like whatever's going on, whatever. It feels like everybody who's anybody, who's doing something new and fresh and whatever, the vast majority, 80% or more, are women. And that's awesome, and I'm very for that. My only concern is that men are falling behind, and they're falling behind in culture. Again, a whole other conversation, but you see it in academic stuff and whatever. But I think when it comes to relationships, God has called us to lead and to pursue and to lovingly shepherd and to care and to build alongside a woman. And so I think what happens is when we don't take that place, you end up with a lot of women that are highly competent, highly capable, but they're very dissatisfied and they're very frustrated. And it's not good for anybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just not. It's just not. And you know, and I think that's creating problems longer term in culture. And so yeah, again, purpose is what leads you
100%.
And what guides you. And apps and things, but that's in the whole era of swiping, it lowers the bar so much to the point you don't have to think about purpose. It's so easy just to be like, what are they doing tonight? You know, and just there you go.
100%. And I see, and I'm putting this out there. I'm not trying to bash men because I truly have a heart for men and I love men in the sense of like, they're my brothers. I really do believe that they have been left behind. I really do. I really feel like they don't have great leaders that can pour into them, can show them, can teach them, can guide them, can give them wisdom in that. Instead, they're left to kind of societal devices. Like, they really are. And I see it with my own friends, my guy friends. I just want to slap them sometimes. Like, you are too old. You've got to get it together, you know? And it's like, but I do feel like that's a big lack is like, you know, it goes back to marriages, not having the examples. But I think men also don't have other men to talk to like deal with a lot of these issues, to dig in deep. And, you know, I think that's a big problem. And I think that's where women, we've kind of like surpassed men entirely. I love this guy, Brian Reeves. I follow his work a lot. He does a lot of work specific to men. And I started diving deep into his work because it just opened up my mind because I'd be so frustrated with guys I was dating. And you know, I'm like, oh, why do they act like this? Why are they so immature? Why aren't they, you know? And he has such a beautiful approach to men. It just, you know, it gave me a lot of compassion for men. He talks a lot about just how, you know, men have been taught don't have feelings, shove it down, just suck it up, don't, you know. And then we're women here expecting them now to be compassionate, to be empathetic, to be loving, to be good leaders, to be, but like leaders who can be empathetic and like all, be soft but be masculine and be emotionally available. Like, we're now requiring so much of men, but if you really think about it, who's teaching them that? Like,
yeah.
Like, there aren't great men groups. Men don't get together. Like, women, we'll freaking have therapy sessions together. But, like, men don't have that. Like, men are not getting together and opening up and being vulnerable and talking through these issues. They're either talking with their significant other, which they should be talking to men about, you know? Like, really being able to, you know, you talk to your significant other, but there's got to be a safe space for men to be able to communicate with each other. And I think that is, you know, I think that's a big thing. And I'm going to speak specifically to the church because that's kind of, like, where we're at here, but like I think that's a big reason why there's so many single people in our church, in our churches. Like, I really do. And I think women, we have been to death like grow and do the, you know, like grow and learn about yourself and be better and all that. Like, I feel like I've done so much work on myself, I'm exhausted. You know? And it's like, but it's
so
like
self-work. Well, Proverbs 31 woman, all this stuff.
So much. I'm like, girl, your girl's exhausted. Like, she'd be waiting for her prize, okay? Like, you know, but it's like, but then it's like, how am I going to find that match? Obviously, I trust God that he's going to bring that person, but it's like, that means men have a lot to live up to. Like, they've got a lot of work to do, and they're not doing it is the problem. And we're just seeing it in groves. Like, they're just, it's just not happening, you know? And I think that's what's holding them back a lot of the time from what they really desire. I imagine a lot of them desire marriage and they want all that. But then when they have it, they're like, I don't know what to do with it. Like, I don't know what I want. I don't know. You know, and I, like you said, I think there's not a lot of pressure on men to do that. Like, they can wait forever. They can be in their 50s and still be single. There's not pressure on their end. Whereas for women, we unfortunately do have a clock and we do feel that pressure a lot more. But I think that that's so accurate. Like, I think the lack of pressure on men is a problem. And again, I'm not saying this because I'm bashing them. I'm saying this because, like, things have to change. Like, I think what women are now requiring in relationship, especially a mature relationship, men just have to step up if they want to be, you know, equivalent to that and be able to lead that. Like, if you If you haven't done your own work, if you don't know who you are deep down, if you haven't dealt with some traumas from your childhood, if you don't know how to feel your feelings, all that, it's going to be very hard to find a quality woman who's going to put up with it.
Right.
Who's going to
right? Because she's done all she's done all the inner work and all that stuff. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, and something
you're just
interesting.
Out here, yeah.
Yeah, you're just out here like, I don't know, you know. And I think something interesting Brian Reeves said is like he said a lot of men don't grow out of their adolescence until around 38 to 42. 38 to 42. Wow. That is crazy. And a lot of it is because they get stuck with these patterns from adolescence, and they don't really ever grow out of it. They just kind of get older, but they're still, you know, and a lot of them either still single or in, you know, relationships that aren't very, you know, fulfilling, divorce, things like that. And again, women have a lot of work to do too. By all means, this is not to bash men, but I do feel like men just have been kind of forgotten in that sense. Like, you know, I think there's a lot of work there that needs to be done, and I think it's contributing to why people also aren't getting married earlier.
Right. Yeah. And I see that even more here in LA than I did in other places, because it's so female driven out here, and I've noticed it that point. And so it's and one thing that we've been doing now that we're working on as a new church is, as we get everything established, even with our leadership team and everything, is one thing we noticed early on was, without giving a lot of direction, the women would just kind of take ownership of things. They would just start to lead, and you know, and it didn't really require, like, you know, like my wife like has like these leaders that she's poor, these ladies that she's connecting with, and people will connect with, and they'll just like a little bit of just like, you know, you go girl, and just kind of like helping them grow spiritually, but then they'll run really far. But then with the guys, like as I'm connecting, I'm like, okay, this is going to take a little bit more foundational type stuff. Even just basic things like I, you know, and I've never had someone, I had someone recently even tell me like, yeah, I don't really know if I'm a leader. And I'm like, I know people say that, but like, I've never heard somebody say that to my face. Like, you know what I mean? Like, in a way that's like, and I'm like, well, I'm not saying you have to start your own business or plant your own church, but I mean, you should be someone of influence. You should be somebody that people would want to follow. Like, that's something that I've always aspired to. I can't always control the level of that influence.
Yeah.
Whether it's tens, hundreds, thousands, or millions of people, but you know, I think we all can aspire to that. But just hearing people say things like that, I'm like, okay. And then somebody would say like, yeah, it's actually hard for me to motivate myself. I'm like, you know, if you're not self, like, intrinsically motivated, it's really hard to get somebody to be motivated to grow spiritually. Hey, read your Bible. Hey, pray. Hey, be more engaged. Take ownership. Take leadership. Take, you know, make effort to do something. You know, if you're interested in that girl, like, stop just checking her out of church and go approach her, say something to her, right? You know, and all these things. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I wonder if the disconnect there is because men, because they don't communicate with each other or even in a deep way, if there's a disconnect, or they're just disconnected from themselves. So there's I feel like there's a point where I think men can be so disconnected from themselves because they can't feel their feelings. They just outwardly like try to distract. And I wonder if that's why they're like, I don't feel like I could be a leader, you know, maybe they're not a leader anywhere else, but they're a leader maybe in, you know, a marriage, or they're a leader in, you know, in their relationship, you know. I always wonder that though. I think there's a fear there because they think big fear for men is, I'm not good enough. I'm never going to be good enough. Like, those are kind of the reiterated fears. And so I wonder when a guy approaches you saying that, hey, I don't know if I could be a leader. I don't have motivation. But motivated to what? Like, I think, how can you have motivation if you don't have a goal? Again, if you don't have a North Star, what's your purpose? You don't know yourself. So you're disconnected from who you are. So you don't know what God created you to do. So you have no purpose. So how are you leading? Where are you leading? What are you leading? And how are you motivated to lead if you don't know where you're going? So I think it's like, it all goes back to like, I think it all goes back to like, in our singleness, are we actually using our singleness to the maximum? Like, where we're using the opportunity when we're single to really figure out like, who the hell am I? God, who did you make me?
Yeah.
Who did you make me? What's my purpose? What are like, you know, like, what am I on earth to do?
You just reminded me of something.
What?
Yeah, and you just that's so and I think that's actually the missing piece, because I was asking myself this even before I knew we were going to do this. I'm like, what is the difference? Because like, I'm not perfect, but like for some reason, even in my early 20s, I've always had this sense of yearning to want to do something significant with my life. And
Yeah.
where did it come from? I mean, obviously there's different things I went through as a child, and grew up a single parent home, had a lot of things I had to do on my own. But I think for me, I spent a month and a half traveling the Middle East by myself. And I
Wow.
think sleeping on the beach in Tel Aviv, learning Hebrew and Arabic, like I think every guy, I took multiple road trips across, I've driven across all the United States from Florida to Washington 3 times. And like nights in Montana by myself on the road. And I just think it's moments like that that shape a lot in you. And I think a lot of guys that I've met, it just went high school, college. They just kept doing what they were told they had to do. And then when people stopped telling them what to do, they didn't know what to do.
Yeah,
And
that's
so then when
fair.
you get to a certain point, you're like, I don't really know what I'm doing. I guess I just go to work and I just do my job. But there was never any sense of like self-reliance. Like it's on you. Like you're in the wilderness, build a fire, figure it out. Okay, Lord, help me. It's me and Jesus out here, right? Like I've
Yeah.
had a lot of those me and Jesus moments in my life where I had to just figure it out. And I think there's a certain part of, not to sound like, like Neanderthal, but I think there's a certain part of like being a man where you have to have moments where you have to figure it out. And I think that
Yeah.
the our modern society, there's just, you don't have to do that, especially in a city. I'll just DoorDash it. I'll just
Yeah.
take an Uber. You can't DoorDash your life, right? Like you have DoorDash and Tinder your life away to the point where like you don't know what you're doing because you've never been put in a position where you had to figure out what you should be doing.
Well, yeah, it's
So
something they're,
that's
I
what I think.
think you're disconnected from yourself, so they tend to use distraction. They don't want to deal with it. They don't want to deal with internal anything. What am I? Any of those questions. So instead, they pour themselves out in all the distractions of the world. And so
Yeah,
why
I had an
do
existential awakening at age
Yeah.
22, and so that changed my life. You know what I mean? And I think if
Yeah.
you, you have to have a moment where, and it could be a come to Jesus moment. Everyone can have a different moment, but it has to be a moment where, and I'm not talking about like following Jesus. I'm talking about there has to be a moment where you actually go, okay, where am I going? Who am
Yeah.
I, and where do I want to go? Where do I feel like I'm being called to go? Because one thing you'll notice in life, is there's some things in your life that are just trying to happen, even if you're not making them happen. But
Yeah.
you ever felt like you're being pulled in a direction, right? Whether it's
Yeah.
starting a podcast or whether it's a job or a relationship, like you feel like this is kind of where it's going. Obviously, I have to do the work, but I feel like this is kind of where I'm being pulled in this direction.
Yeah.
So I just keep saying, take a step, And so, yeah, I think for single people, in particular men, but I think women as well, it's really taking that time to figure out who you are when the lights are off, those dark nights of the soul, when you're all alone, like
Yeah.
who am I? If I'm gonna
Yeah.
spend if I spend if I had to spend the rest of my life by myself, if nobody told me to come into work tomorrow, if there was no accountability structure in my life whatsoever,
Yeah.
who am I?
Yeah,
And
I
where am I
think
going?
that's such I think that's at the core of so much. And obviously, beyond that, there's who am I? And then you have your traumas that you have to also work through in order to be in a relationship, but that's a different podcast. This is just more like yeah, it's like really finding, yeah, who am I in the dark? Who and it's funny because I think for me that moment came when I moved to San Diego. I felt that was definitely a God thing. I moved to San Diego for a job. I didn't know a soul. Nobody, literally nobody. It was a really, really tough year. I was dating long distance, which was a terrible idea to do. And I felt so alone. Like I felt so alone in that year. But that is the year that I was like, there's something inside of me. Like, I still don't know what it is. Like, we're still figuring it out. But there, I felt like, oh, God's putting something on my heart. There's something inside of me. And it, I have a lot to say. But that was what, 2019, and we're in 2023, and I'm just now starting a podcast. It doesn't always happen instantly, but it's like that was that moment. I think if I really felt that God took me to San Diego for a purpose because I was living in Long Beach before, and I had the best time. I had, like, all the friends. I had all the activities, all the things. I was distracted, though. I mean, I had something every night of the week. My life now looks so different. Yep. But back then, literally, salsa dancing, this. Every night of the week, I had something. So it's like, how am I going to discover who I am? I had no idea. I was just wailing out, like, having fun just every night of the week. And it was like, then God's like, oh, you're going to go to San Diego. And I'm like, what? Why? Like, the only job opening possible. Like, I applied everywhere. The only place that offered me a job. I'm like, okay, I have no job. I got to go. So I go, and it was funny because I feel like that was like the wilderness for me. Like, when God talks about you going through the wilderness, that was the wilderness. I was like, I don't know a soul here. And I'm a social person. Like, you know, but it was, like I said, that was the year that kind of planted the seed for this podcast. Was that year was... You know, I was alone. I started reading books. I was in a relationship that, like, at the time I felt so alone in. And now I know, in retrospect, I know why. But so it led me to, like, I started reading books. I got into Brené Brown. I was reading Rachel Hollis back then. Like, just started reading all this stuff and learning about, like, who I am and my issues and all of that. And, you know, and that was instrumental into moving to LA. Because I think if I had moved from Long Beach straight to LA, it would have been really tough. Because I think... If you don't know who you are moving to this city, it will rip you up apart. I really do believe that. Like, I feel like you really have to come here and kind of have a sense of who you are and what you're driven toward and all of that, because this place will influence you, and not always in the best way. I think it's influenced me in good ways, like my health and my diet and my working out. I'm all about it now. But I can see that. Like, it can have you waver because it's so distracting. So I feel that strongly for a lot of single people, like, really taking this time, you know, to really hone in and figure that out and really work on yourself, because I think that's going to allow us to make better choices in who we're going to date. Because I think it comes to that, like, who we're even saying yes to, you know? And I think that goes to men. Okay, how do I lead? How do I be motivated? Well, again, it goes back to, well, who are you? What's your purpose? You know, without going through that, it's going to be really hard to answer those questions, you know?
Yeah, and I think that we like to avoid pain. I'm reading this book right now called Leadership Pain. By Sam Chan. It's such a great book about how, in order to be a good leader, you need to raise your threshold of pain.
Oh, yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
I'm like, I think I did enough, but then I planned a church and this happened. I'm like, okay, I gotta raise that pain threshold just again and again and again. But you have those moments where you're like, I don't think I can do this anymore. Like, I wonder if I could just quit and go back to what I used to do, you know?
Oh, I thought about that last week. I was right? Like, oh my God. I no joke last week was like, can I just, like, work at a restaurant? Like, I don't want to do all, like, I was like, this is too much. Life is too much. I was like ready to quit everything.
Can I just clock in and clock out and just go home?
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Exactly.
Life was so much simple.
So much. This whole trying to find my purpose. I'm like, I'll just work at a restaurant, be a bartender, be fine.
Yeah, easy, right? And I think, like you said about the city, when people come to a city like this very young, it influences you, often negatively, because you don't have a sense of who you are. And that's why I said, like, I think it's, you know, I came here a little bit older, so I think it's better. But I think a lot of people come, you know, and it messes them up and all that stuff, which puts them back even further. But yeah, I think all that coming together, we try to avoid pain. We try to avoid that learning, that growth, and it bleeds into relationships. And so you're right. People they're dating aimlessly. They're going aimlessly. And then another thing to that too is like just this culture of just, I've never seen, like, there's, everything's an event. Everything's an event.
Like, so true. I'm like the event planner and I'm event. Like, yeah.
Yeah. But it is. I mean, like a church, like we would back, you know, before, like we would have events and stuff, but like, treating every Sunday like it's its own event, like, but it's a thing. Like, you're constantly like, it's like before I'd be like, oh yeah, young adults hang out, we're gonna do this, and maybe we'll go bowling, or we'll have that, you know, come hang out, maybe we'll make a post on Instagram, and then, you know, it'll get likes and whatever, you know. But now it's like, no, Sunday you gotta promote it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's this sense I've noticed here, and you can tell me if this is true, maybe it's my perception, it's this sense of like, people expect you to promote things. And if you don't promote them to a certain point, they go, it must not be that dope if it's not promoted. I guess I just won't come. You know, and I'm like,
everything in LA is about perception. Like, and I obviously, I work in marketing, and I just, like, that's what it is. Everything in LA is so much about perception. Oh, was it promotable? Then I'll go. Oh, was it on that? Then I'll go. Oh, did so-and-so tag it? Then I'll go. You know? It's, like, such a,
So I figure that all out, and I the almighty algorithm, I know it all now. But the interesting thing about it is, again, that bleeds into everything else that we do. And so that influences relationships when it shouldn't, you know, because people are, it's like you're more in love with the idea of something. You're not understanding. There's something called confirmation bias, where what one person thinks this person's attractive, and so I think they're attractive, or this person thinks this is that. And it's like, well, what do you think? Like, think for yourself. Form your own opinion about this individual, about this thing. But life moves so fast that nobody's slowing down enough to think through what they're looking for.
No. And then that's why we stay in relationships long that are not good for us. I mean, and there's also trauma things that for that reason. But this is just, we're just generalizing for everyone listening, for the two people that are listening. It's just generalizing. But we do. I think we fantasize. You know, we're more in love with the idea of being with someone and the idea of a relationship than we are of what actually a relationship will call us to be and will call from us, like what it requires of us. I think that's another thing, is we get really stuck on, I want to be in a relationship, I want to be all that. But then what we don't ask is, like, well, what do I need to be in a healthy relationship? Like, where's my responsibility in that area? And it goes back to, again, you don't want to feel pain. We don't want to take the responsibility for ourselves. We don't want to take the responsibility of finding what we want. We just, you know, and that's a big thing, too. It's like not taking, you know, because I think a big part of it is we get frustrated. Like, it goes back to this book I'm reading, Calling in the One. But I love it because she makes us, the way she writes it, it's very much like, you got to take responsibility for yourself. So, like, you're in a bad relationship, or you're in a relationship you're not fulfilled in. Have you communicated your needs? Have you done all this? And if you have and this person cannot meet them, well, guess what? That is your cue to walk away and to move on. Instead, we stay and we're like, but this is so annoying. And why aren't they like that? And da-da-da-da-da. And I'm guilty. I have done that many a times. But, you know,
You can't change people.
And it's like really taking that responsibility on for ourselves. And I think that's, it just goes back to, like, kind of everything we're saying. It's like, I go back and forth, because it's like this whole, everything's about self. And it kind of is, like, because I think we've come to a society where we've, like, avoided self so much, you know, like true self, like deep down, who did God make you to be? That, like, it is coming back to that. Like, it's coming back to, like, who am I as a core person? Because I think the problem is, in our society now, as we have so much influence around us that will tell us who we should be, what we should wear, what we should like, what we should look like, how our hair should be. Every little thing around us is constantly grabbing our attention to tell us who we are and who we should be. And it's like, that's going to affect us, because I feel like, are we just putting on a shell of a human, of who we think everyone wants us to be? And then we're dating from that place. So we're not even dating from an authentic of who we are place. We're dating from a shell of a place that has been built by society, telling us what we look like and all the things. And then we're in these relationships long term. And then maybe we wake up one day and realize who we really are. And then we're looking at the person we're dating, maybe even married to, and we're like, oh, I would have never picked you had I done the work on myself and had I actually understood who I was at the core.
Yeah. You know? And so what happens is relationships, it's like, who does Equinox want me to be with or be like?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
People look at all these things that pop up in my feed all the time. But I think it's interesting, because you're right. People will get into relationships, and relationships become almost like an aesthetic.
Yes. Like, it fits their life.
Like an accessory. It's so interesting to me.
Like, here's my boyfriend. You know? He fits perfectly into my world. He dresses like me.
He fits in with my Chanel bag, and he fits in with my you know, whatever else. And you're right. It's a whole thing. And you're right. And I love, like, all these personality things, like the Enneagram, and there's DISC assessments, and there's, you know, and I've used tools like that. But that doesn't even tell you who you are.
No.
That doesn't tell you who you are at the core. So I've used things like that after I've already done that determination of who I am. And even when we talk about, like, introversion, extroversion, people don't really understand. That doesn't really define who you are either.
No.
You know? So if you don't know who you are at the core, like, who is Logan? Who am I? Who am I by my, who am I anytime?
By yourself.
You know?
And I think that's the, like, I can hear the question people asking, well, how do I figure that out? Well, what do I do? Well, how do I know? And I think a big thing is spending time with yourself.
Honesty is such a big
yeah,
thing.
Yeah. Like, not distracting, not trying to just go on to the next thing, go to the next event, plan the next trip, go to the next party. Good. Like, that's all I did in my 20s. I was like, my career, this, next, constantly. Like, I didn't have a break.
Yep.
And when I finally had a break, I was like, oh, you start to see yourself a lot more, you know? And you drop the defenses. You know, I think a lot of it is knowing how to spend time with yourself, with your thoughts, with your feelings, with all of that. And really getting at, like, asking yourself, like, do I actually really like this? Or am I just liking this because everyone's telling me I like this, you know? I think it's a lot of time spent alone. Mm-hmm. At least that's what I think. I think that's a starting point. Because then there's therapy and all the other things. I think the starting point is, can I spend time with myself?
Right. And so when we sit down with couples or single people, like in a church setting, and I'll be kind of counseling somebody through, like, a life situation, I'll do this thing where, like, I'll try to bring them back to, like, what I call first principles, like, just take a step back and just critically think about this situation right now.
Yeah.
You know, like someone's like having an issue with their roommate, or they're praying about their job, or about going to go back to school, or about a relationship. And it's like, again, like, you're moving so fast that you're not thinking about what you really need, you know, and you see it, like, you're hopping churches, you're hopping jobs, you're moving around, you're doing all these things.
We're doing. We're in a culture of doing.
Yeah.
That's all we know.
Exactly.
We don't know how to...
Just take a break.
Like, God right now in my life has been telling me to wait. Wait on him. Wait. And I'm like, so I just want to do anything? He's like, no. I want you to wait and hold on. And I'm like, this is... Are you sure? I'm like...
Yeah. Wait on the Lord.
You don't want me to do anything? Please. And he's like, no. Like, I have something for you. And you have... It's like, the next opportunity is going to come, but you have to wait. It's not ready. And I'm like... It's so countercultural. And it's the same thing with, like, discovering parts of yourself. It's the quieting down. It's the not doing.
Mm-hmm. There's a verse in Psalm.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, it's, you know, as I'm in the book of Psalms, King David is talking about, and he says, you know, I've calmed and quieted my soul before the Lord. And that's something that I try to do every day, every morning. I try to do it throughout the day, have those moments where I'm, especially now that I'm doing so much, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm involved in a lot of things, a lot of events and different, you know, things that are both internal and external, but taking those times to just stop and quiet my soul and my mind and just not even like think, I don't even think I'll just sit sometimes, you know.
Huge.
Just take some time, take 15, 20 minutes and just kind of sit and just listen for the voice of the Holy Spirit in my life.
Yeah.
And God will talk to you. He really will. And so, yeah, I think a lot of these things, you know, from a faith perspective, it's hard to access this kind of stuff if you're depending on your belief system. But I think if you're somebody who really does follow Jesus, if that's number one in your life, you really need to take that time to step back, to calm and quiet your mind and quiet your soul and quiet your heart and really focus and process what God's speaking to you in the moment.
Yeah. And for those who are, you know, who are listening, who may not be Christian, may not follow Jesus, I think a big part of it is just slowing down and quieting down, really creating space in your life for yourself. Because I don't think we do it enough. We don't know how to sit with ourselves and our thoughts and our feelings. And we either feel it and we want to, like, you know, or we distract and we want to be busy. So I think that's a huge part, you know, and I think that's being able to do that, I think will clear your mind and really allow you to see kind of who you are, and what you need and what you're looking for. I think that's like at least the starting point.
For sure.
Awesome. Well, we've hit our end of this episode and this was so great. Hopefully everyone enjoyed it. Logan, thank you so much for joining and just chatting through just what we're experiencing here in LA in the dating phase. We could go on. We could literally talk for like probably 2 hours about all this. But thank you so much. And we appreciate you being on here.
Thanks so much, Beatrice. Have a great day.
Thanks.